Welcome to the Big Pod Machine. Jason Williams, Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer Sports Columnist, along with my friend, colleague, Reds beat reporter, Gordon Whitmire.
Combatant, occasional combatant.
Combatant. Gordo?
J-Dub.
How we doing, man?
We're hanging in there.
Hey, great to be back. Our first episode of the Big Pod Machine. You and I want back together. We covered baseball earlier in our careers in Minnesota. And
dude, that was almost 20 years ago.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You still look.
Time goes.
Mark Sheldon and I were just talking the other day that you still look exactly the same.
Same haircut.
You like look the same. I mean, you got.
I don't know about that.
You got like some gray, but like I do not. I am full on gray here.
Well, you still got young kids. My kids are grown. Maybe that's part of it.
My kids are 10 and 6. Yeah, right. Your kids are all. Your daughter just graduating college. It's crazy to think that. It's great to be back together. I know our readers, our audience is really enjoying your coverage. 30 plus years of covering baseball?
Hey, man, don't age me that much. It ain't quite that. It's 20 something.
But your sources, your contacts in the game. You covered Ken Griffey Jr. when at the Seattle Times when he was a kid.
I wasn't at the Times, but I was on the beat in Seattle.
Oh, you were in Seattle.
I went from the Times to Seattle a smaller paper.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. But yeah, all those years and the connections you have with scouts and people in both leagues, and so really enjoying your coverage. I want to mention too, I know a lot of people, and we've gotten tremendous feedback on this, something that you and I did in Minnesota was the point counterpoint column. I know we've had questions on Twitter about it. The Whitmire and Williams weekly column, point counterpoint, we pick a topic and we argue it, basically, and obviously in a civil manner.
A debatable
point. We debate it, yeah.
And the best part about it is we usually disagree on things, so it's a very honest column.
Absolutely. And I know there's been some folks that have been like, well, you just take this side because he's on that side, but really you agree. No, we settle on a topic that we both have – that we both land on the completely opposite side of. So then, therefore, we can have a debate. So check out, if you haven't yet, a lot of feedback on that. We've been going since early July, I believe the first weekend of July, we launched that column. So if you haven't seen that yet, Cincinnati.com, just search Whitmire and Williams for that point counterpoint weekly column, usually coming out Tuesday mornings on Cincinnati.com or Wednesday mornings sometimes on Cincinnati.com. That will complement what we're doing here. We'll be discussing different stuff here.
We may even get off of baseball once in a while. I want to talk about this Huskies winning the Big Ten here pretty soon.
Gordon being a University of Washington alum, he has to bring his hat in. That'll be fun. Maybe we could stay away from politics.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea in our case. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think people would probably enjoy that.
Well, some people might.
Some people might.
It might make the podcast pretty long, though.
It certainly would make the podcast lively, though.
It would make it loud. Yeah. Yeah, let's talk baseball, dude.
By the way, our producer, Phil Didion, Silent Phil, he's on the ones and twos, and thank him for all the great work he's doing. Gordon, a couple things I want to talk about today. Number one, the home record. This kind of hit me over the weekend as I was hosting Saturday night show on 700 WLW, and I was just looking at the standings, looking at the expanded standings, and I didn't even realize it, but the Reds have a losing record at home, 29-31, and they're particularly have been terrible since the All-Star break, 6-10 since the All-Star break, only one. They're 1-5
on the last
homestand.
Yeah.
Against teams, the Washington Nationals, not a good team, and then Miami, very similar.
And Miami, they blew two games and you know, we can get into tiebreakers for the playoffs and things like that. But that was bigger than just losing a couple games, because that's a team you're fighting for a playoff spot
with. The only team in baseball with a winning record overall, but with a losing record at home.
Yeah. Now, that might change this homestand.
Yeah, as we record right now.
They got Cleveland and Toronto for 5.
Yep. We're recording here on Tuesday morning as the Reds prepare to play the Guardians later tonight.
Yeah,
that could change this certainly this week. But at the end of the day, like how can you be a true serious contender if you don't even win? You don't have a winning record at home, and maybe they aren't.
It typically doesn't work that way. They better start taking care of business at home. And now maybe with, you know, they had a steady diet of the Brewers out of the gate in the second half, and that did them no favors because for whatever reason they can't seem to beat the Brewers this year. So maybe that's part of it. But if they don't take care of business at home, we've already seen a lot of their schedule coming out of the break has been at home, and they haven't taken care of business. And we saw, they've been dropping like a rock in the standings. You got to take care of business at home. Now, on the bright side, they're doing well on the road. And early on when they started surging, it struck me that they seemed to play up with the bigger crowds and things like that. When they went into Houston, I mean, that was probably the most impressive series I've seen them play since I've been here for a little over 2 months.
Swept the series.
Exactly. And those were big crowds, weekend series. And so, hostile crowds. They did really well. I think a young team tends to feed off of energy. And I think that's part of what we saw because the crowds started coming out at home too. And some of the bigger crowds at home against some of the better opponents, they played really well. They played the Braves really well with some sellouts in that series, beat them in a big comeback. That was a wild game.
I believe
lost
all
a couple
of
close ones.
Games, right?
Very, yes. Yes. And they had a chance to win every one of them. So I do think there is something to youth feeding off of energy, but you've got to take care of business at home. The prevailing theory in the clubhouse is that they just happened to play their best baseball. Remember the 12-game winning streak, that terrific month of June, a lot of road games. And then 12-game winning streak, 8 of it was on the road, you know, 3 of it in Kansas City, a last place team, 2 of it in St. Louis, a last place team, maybe some of that, but part of that was the Astros too. So maybe it corrects. The upside is that they've been playing well on the road.
Have any explanation from inside the clubhouse as to maybe what some of the guys in there are saying?
They just think it's timing. It's just timing.
Yeah.
You know, and David Bell, the manager, suggests the same thing, but he also says what we've just said, you know, that he has seen teams over the years, and he played a long time in the big leagues on a bunch of different teams, where some teams do play better in one or the other. He doesn't think that's the case with his team, and he agrees with us. I mean, it needs to change at home.
Well, 5-game homestand here against the Guardians and the Blue Jays. Blue Jays are a good team, followed by a 10-game road trip to the West Coast.
That's a big road trip. Huge. There's a couple wild card
followed then
out
by
there.
A 10-game homestand.
Right. Which opens, I believe, with the Cubs, which is another huge series.
4 games against the Cubs starting September
1st. In 3 days.
Labor Day weekend.
Because it opens with a doubleheader. So you're coming back from the West Coast and immediately jumping into a doubleheader. So that's going to be a grind. They need every one of these off days they've got right now.
Yeah, because then, we can talk more about, I think, the schedule. Let's stay focused on right now winning at home. But I want to switch gears. We want to get to there still seems to be a malaise, a cloud looming over this club from the trade deadline.
Hey, man, I'm with you on that.
And I think you and I and a lot of people, you've written a lot about it, a lot of great analysis pieces about it. I think one thing, though, that is a piece of this that's still lingering around, and I think even became even a you could point to it over the weekend, is Nick Senzel. Nick Senzel gets sent down to AAA Louisville over the weekend, and here's a guy who thought he was going to be traded.
Yeah.
And what do you do in Nick Senzel here on the – I got the bobblehead.
Hey, Nick, did you think you'd be traded? Hell yes. Look, Senzel to me – is the symbol of the Reds at the trade deadline this year in this regard. Clearly, they didn't add enough. I think guys in that clubhouse expected them to add a starter, but whether it's Michael Lorenzen or whomever.
And you're starting to bring me around to this, by the way, as you know, we've been on different sides of this.
And, the language that they used in that clubhouse leading up to that is, we love our guys in here. We don't want to lose our guys in here. Well, that wasn't going to be the point of adding somebody, because as we saw, Michael Lorenzen went to the Phillies for a prospect. As we saw, that was the number five prospect in the Phillies system. The Phillies have one of the lesser farm systems in baseball. The Reds have one of the best. Maybe it takes a 10, a number 10, or whatever. The point is, you're not trading Noelvi Marte, your number one prospect, to get Michael Lorenzen. You could have traded a prospect. Anyway, the point being that I think the guys in that clubhouse expected help. They got Sam Maul, left-handed reliever from Oakland.
A depth piece.
A depth guy. That's fine.
But okay.
There's nothing wrong with adding that. But you add Sam Maul, you got to add more. And they didn't. And that was it. In fact, they whiffed on the final day. I think that impacted this team. There's no way to measure that for sure, and they're not going to say that. They're not going to admit that. But I do believe that there's been a noticeable emotional tone that's changed since the deadline. And you just happened to be in Chicago at the time when the Cubs added, and the fact that they added at all was, if not a surprise, an achievement for those guys, because they went down to the last weekend undecided on whether they were going to buy or sell. And when that team convinced the front office to buy at all, and then they added the third baseman, the best third baseman on the market, to fill a decisive need, that you saw the emotions of the Cubs, and they came out and just rolled the Reds after that. So take that for whatever it's worth.
And then you throw on top of that last week, and again, we'll get back to Senzel, but you throw on top of that, and I know Reds fans are... All these things keep happening. Michael Lorenzen goes into Philadelphia, throws a no-hitter.
He's a National League Player of the Week.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I still say this, that even though the Tigers gave up their number five prospect, that doesn't mean that's
the Phillies.
Or the Phillies, sorry.
Right. To the Tigers.
That doesn't mean that's not what the Phillies were asking of the Reds.
Correct. So we don't know exactly what they were asking, and I've heard that the asks in general were very big, but... You've got a cache, a farm system that has a treasure trove right now of prospects, and you've got a roster where you've already graduated some of the best ones. The guys that you've tabbed as your long-term pieces to this rebuild, and they're competitive now. So how many of these guys do you need to keep? I mean, you've got long-term guys already. You can't use them all. This is where... rubber meets the road for a front office in determining, you know, evaluating your own players and making hard decisions on who to part with when it's time to try to win. And that's what they didn't do. Now, getting back to Senzel, I'll just throw this out there. Senzel was a guy that could have been addition by subtraction. Now, I heard they didn't get offered much for him, but with all due respect to Nick Senzel, take a bag of balls for him. Because
correct. Now you're not going to get anything for him.
Now you're getting nothing for him, because this is a guy that's in his arbitration years. This is a guy who has lost like more and more playing time with every guy that's been promoted. And he was your starting center fielder last year. He's been injured. He's had injury issues over the years. He's in his second of 4 years of arbitration eligibility. So he's got leverage to make a little bit of money. He's actually of less value to you than he was a year ago. And really, honestly, you'd be better off with him off the roster. And if we didn't already know that they thought that, they optioned him a few days ago in Pittsburgh. So that shows you everything you need to know. He doesn't have value for them on the big league roster.
So you expect them to non-tender him. Cut him in the offseason, right?
At the minimum, it's a light. That's what it looks like. I don't know why, barring something unforeseen, I don't know why you would go through arbitration with him. He's making almost $2 million this year, pay him $3 million next year to sit him on the bench. I don't know why the Cincinnati Reds would do that.
But why not? Why wouldn't they have just dealt him, as at least some club out there would – need a depth piece, and they could have just gotten some low level prospect even.
Now,
could
he
have done that.
He came with a bit of a reputation, you know, a guy that
I mean, a Scott Boris client. I mean, a lot of Scott Boris clients come with, whether it's fair or not, they come with that reputation. Right. And that's not a criticism of Scott Boris, who's
does done great
actually,
work.
Actually,
he's probably an all-time agent.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Senzel would tell you that he's probably grown up this year, too, in the last few years. And all indications of the people around him suggest that's true. But, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a lingering perception. At any rate, he would have been a very highly incentivized player if somebody would have picked him up. Mm-hmm. And the Reds would have probably been better off moving him for anything, a low A flyer, you know, something. And they didn't. And to me, that's a big part of the story and maybe a symbol of them essentially losing and screwing up the trade deadline.
Yeah. Nick Senzel just, it just feels like a guy who, former first round pick, but mm-hmm. it's time for a change of scenery.
Second overall, I believe.
Second overall in 2016, I think, was it? Was it?
Total change of scenery guy.
2016, change of scenery. I mean, his career, batting .236. He's batting .219 this year.
He's a nice player. He's a good player.
Yeah. Under 300 on base percentage. Like He still hits
left-handers. I mean, that was the thing. Yeah. Even with the limited playing time, he was effective against left-handers.
And honestly, a solid defensive player. Take out what happened there in Chicago. I think that just sort of spiraled downward on him.
Yeah, and he's a better like he's a natural third baseman. He's a plus he's a plus third baseman historically in his career and hasn't really gotten the runway to just go with it, whether it was because Suarez was here or he sort of settled into center field for a while and then he became this toggle guy between outfield and infield, and then you started seeing the prospects come up.
Yeah.
So bad timing for him. Didn't put himself in position really to be part of the core once the core began to change, but it's on the front office that they didn't move him.
Good stuff. Let's switch gears into what we're going to do here on the big pod machine.
Yeah.
And into the reaction phase where we take your tweets, your emails. I was going to say calls, but we take your feedback.
If you can find our phone number, give it a shot.
Actually, we don't even have landlines here.
We don't have landlines.
Does anyone have landlines anymore? Do you have one in your house?
No.
Got rid of that. I know Silent Phil doesn't. This segment, the last segment of the podcast, is we certainly have our viewpoints in the column here on the podcast. So we certainly want to hear yours. I didn't have anything specifically for today, just because it's our first episode, and just to let people know, at GWMLB on Twitter for Gordon, at J Williams Cincy, CINCY on Twitter for me, email G Wittenmeyer at inquire.com and J Williams at inquire.com. Send us your feedback. Good or bad, whether you like something or not, really want to hear your viewpoints. Want to use this segment as an opportunity to highlight some of those, maybe answer a few questions, maybe take our lumps a little bit. But one thing, I didn't have anything prepared, but I've seen this response on Twitter. Two things. Going back to the Whitmire and Williams column, I have seen a little bit of feedback on Twitter about saying, like, what is this? And again, just to reiterate, that is a point counterpoint column. We pick a topic that we know we're both on the opposite sides of. We debate it. That's what that is. It's new. I understand some people are like, "What the heck is this?" When I was on the news side,
give us ideas for that one too.
Absolutely, give us ideas for that. When I was on the news side, I did that sometimes with our opinion editor, Kevin Aldridge. We just did it more sporadically. This is every week because Gordon and I did this at the St. Paul Pioneer Press together, and readers, Twins fans loved it, gave us great feedback on it. And so we thought, hey, let's try it here. The other thing, too, I've seen on Twitter, is people were like, you know, Gordon for several years covered the Chicago Cubs, first for the Sun Times, then for NBC Chicago. And, you know, people were, oh, you know, the Cubs are obviously a Central Division rival of the Reds. And people were like, well, Gordon's a Cubs fan. I want to give you a chance to respond to that. I already know what you're going to say. I'm not going to speak for you. So
nobody who has followed me or the responses from Cubs fans would think that I'm a Cubs fan.
Right.
No Cubs fan thinks that I'm a Cubs fan. And definitely ownership and their business operations know that I'm not a fan of theirs. But I'm not a fan of any team.
Right. You're a journalist.
I mean, you know, and Jason, you know this. You do this job for even a year and it beats the fan out of you. And that's not a bad thing. If you care about doing this job the right way, you don't bring fandom into it. Over the years, I've become a fan of people that I've covered.
No doubt.
In the same way that, you know, you become a fan of people in your life. But as far as teams go, no. I mean, I covered – the first team I covered as a beat was the Mariners, and I did grow up as a fan of the Mariners. But as soon as I started covering them, that went away fast. I mean, you see how the sausage is made in the whole thing. So if you're doing this job the right way, you're nobody's fan. And as a matter of fact, you're probably not doing your job right if you're not pissing people off on both sides of the coin occasionally.
Yeah, I find it interesting, and this maybe is a longer conversation. Maybe we could quickly kind of talk about it. My mentality has always been, I've been a sports writer. I've been a business reporter. I was a political writer. Then I was a columnist, the news political columnist. Now I'm, which is opinion writing. Now I'm sports columnist, which is opinion writing. My approach has always been to cover sports as a journalist. You're a journalist first, yeah, covering sports. You're a journalist covering politics.
And
you're
by
a journalist
the way,
covering transportation, which is what I did here when I started here over a decade ago.
You know, if 100 years ago or 75 years ago, this job was mostly covering games, it's not even close to that anymore.
Right.
This is a multi-billion dollar industry. This is politics and business as much as it's sports. And if you don't keep your eye on those balls, then you're probably not putting into context what's actually going on.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because I've noticed the difference in just audiences coming from news to sports is my approach hasn't changed. I mean, my style is still similar as a columnist, but whereas when I would cover politics and I would write commentary on politics, I always knew, yeah, it was going to be 50% are going to agree and 50% are going to disagree. And that was, and readers and subscribers of Inquirer know I'm not afraid to take on either side. When I criticize something on the sports side, it's a little different. The feedback is different. And I'll be honest with you, like, I thought like coming from politics, it's like it'll never be this rough and tumble, the feedback and the things that people say. It can be pretty rough and tumble.
Until you started doing this column, correct me if I'm wrong, the last time you did sports was pre-Twitter.
That's right.
And
like
sports Twitter.
Well, it's funny because I talked to our summer interns a couple weeks ago. I was, the guest speaker at their luncheon, and we talked. This is what I spent the entire hour talking about, how to handle feedback, because I don't think we as an industry are, or even journalism schools. I mean, we had students in there from all kinds of great journalism, Mizzou and Michigan and UC and just all kinds of different programs. And I said, in any of your classes, Mizzou being, generally speaking, probably the best journalism school. So the student I asked, like, they talk about how to handle feedback or how to manage it, what to do about it. In any of your journalism classes, no. And I'm not picking
on that's unbelievable.
Because everyone in there, like, no, we've never talked about this.
Job.
Totally. It's more we can talk about. It's an area I'm very passionate about, because there's this part of me that wants to engage with people. But when you're saying nasty stuff and you're taking personal shots and you're not using your real name, and that's really always been my kind of thought, even pre-social media, was like, you know, you're going to send me an anonymous email and just throw bombs and just, you know, go low. It's like, I'm not going to respond.
Yeah. Plus, I don't know if you're a 45-year-old middle-aged man, a grandmother, or a 12-year-old. You know, there's just no way to know who I'm even interacting with half the time.
But I always say, like, and like, I want tough feedback. I'm fine with people disagreeing. Hey, and so that's what we want
here. Bring it hard. If you've got a point, like absolutely. If you've got a legit point, bring it. I mean, I know
Twitter is a different animal and it's just whatever, but there are still a lot of great, points, questions that are made on Twitter. I will say this. I find email to be almost always has happened when I was news columnist and sports columnist. People would disagree with me and they would lay into me, but it was always, they had a point. They always backed up what they were saying and they were always civil about it.
Yeah.
And in email.
Well, if you think about just the process, it's probably a little honestly, more like, thoughtful. I felt like by email definition. Too.
That's like you're paying customers as well. So, and I always felt obligation to try to get back. I can't get back to all of them, but anyway, send us your feedback. We really want it. We welcome it at GWMLB on Twitter, at J William Cincy on Twitter, G Wittenmeyer at Inquirer.com, J Williams at Inquirer.com. Find this podcast on all your listening platforms, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, we'll also have this on Cincinnati.com every week to listen to. So thank you for your initial support of this podcast. And
Assuming there's initial support,
whatever. We will catch you next week.